police have refused any comment. Four people have been arrested for stripping and stealing the elder Jordan's car found last week in Fayetteville, North Carolina.
James Jordan, father of basketball superstar Michael Jordan, had tried to 18-year-olds accused of murdering the father of basketball star Michael Jordan appeared in court.
Welcome back to another episode of Seven Deadly Sinners. Thank you guys so much for listening, and if you're basketball fans, you're in for a treat today, because this episode is inspired by March Madness, which is obviously going on right now. Michael Jordan was the all-time great. Everything he touched seemed to turn to gold. He was handsome, magnetic, captivating, and obviously an unbelievable athlete. Beyond the court, he became the most marketed man on earth and was arguably the most famous person during that era. You have to think about it. With today's widespread fame because of social media, there's influencers, reality stars, actors, obviously, but the market is flooded. But Michael Jordan, without social media, was arguably one of the most famous or the most famous man on the planet. He couldn't go anywhere without a camera in his face or fans just trying to touch him, crying when they saw him. He was absolutely hounded by the media. And at one point, he was the golden boy. But the media started to turn on him and critique his every move. And they did this at the time of the worst tragedy imaginable in someone's life. The murder of his father. This is the story of Michael Jordan, his infamous career, and the day his world came crashing down. And he played his last game with his best friend of a father in attendance and gave it all up and retired due to heartbreak. The murder of James R. Jordan shocked the world and absolutely broke sport's biggest star. We will discuss Michael's career and the support and close-knit relationship between he and his father, how his father attended every game of Michael's. We will discuss the life of James R. Jordan Sr. and his backstory. We'll discuss the mysterious and full of questions still to this day of the murder of James R. Jordan, the conspiracy theories that float around the internet, and where the case stands today.
Mr. Jordan had pulled off the side of the road to rest for a while, and he was shot to death while in his car and was taken to the state of South Carolina and placed into the swamp where he was found.
None of those charged are said to be murder suspects. Jordan's body was found August 3rd. The Jordan family has released a statement saying they are shocked by the sudden loss.
Police findings seem to confirm the idea that they had yesterday that this was merely a random act of violence and not a premeditated murder. Again, throughout the morning, we'll continue to bring you the latest information we have on the arrest of two suspects in the murder of James.
And I'll be joined once again today by Greg Hunter, the ultimate basketball fan, who actually suggested this case to me. And you know what? I kind of had to do it because it's March Madness, like I said, and I couldn't think about anything but basketball with Greg screaming in the other room, cheering for his favorite teams or being upset about...
My bracket's busted. First it was Nebraska. Then it was Oregon.
Then Colorado.
Then Colorado.
Now maybe James May.
Madison.
Well, I just call it James May because of Kristen's...
Otherwise, I had all the right picks.
We still could. I told you to put $20 more in and really
but
give it
right,
a go.
I love basketball. I'm Indiana born and bred. I wouldn't say I eat, sleep, and breathe, but at one point I did eat, sleep, and breathe basketball. Now I just occasionally dream of basketball.
Well, and you are super tall and good at basketball. Oh, one quick funny story before we get into... I mean, part of this is like an amazing story of Michael Jordan, but it is very tragic what happened to his dad, but... One of my favorite stories of Greg is he was playing basketball with my, 12-year-old nephew. Maybe he was 14. I don't know. And I was watching them on the courts in California. And my husband literally checked. Is that the term? Like, what is it when you swipe? You swiped the ball out
block.
Oh, yeah. You blocked. Sorry. You were, like, blocking this 14-year-old kid.
Oh, I was making him better.
I was like, calm down.
And it worked because we went on to play, like, a group of three 18-year-olds. Me and him, and then they gave us one of their scrub players.
Scrub players.
One of their worst friend, probably.
And you guys,
Elias and I crushed it. An out-of-shape 30-year-old, and like, yeah, I think he was maybe not even 14 at the time.
I don't think so. But it was so hilarious. The look on your face, it was like you were playing in the championship game, as if you were Michael Jordan.
Gotta take every game seriously.
Well, no, he's not as tall as you yet, but he's getting close.
We'd make a great two-on-two squad, you know, just waiting for the opportunity.
Meanwhile, when I was playing basketball when I was in junior high, it was the last time I faked that I had asthma because I didn't want to run that much. Well, I was overweight. Anyways, I told my parents I had asthma. I was like, I'm good. I can't do it.
Well, I mean, for reference for this episode, like, I know what I'm talking about. I played at a high level of basketball. Well,
that's why I'm having you on this episode.
My high school basketball team was in Conference Indiana. They produce lot of NBA talent.
You
played against some NBA talent in my day. I mean, they're in the NBA now. I won't name names.
Okay. All right. Now you're giving stats. Now, should we get to the actual story?
I mean, there's like Michael Jordan and then Greg Hunter, you know? I mean,
so it's very simple. Very simple. Very simple.
So it made sense I was a guest for this episode.
Yes, that's why. So who was James R. Jordan? Jordan was born in Wallace, North Carolina on July 31st, 1936, to sharecroppers. He met his wife, his high school sweetheart, Dolores, well in high school, and they stayed together until the end. Dolores Jordan was born in September of 1941. She was born in Rocky Point, North Carolina, and attended Charity High School, where she met her future husband, James R. Jordan Sr., in 1954. At a basketball game, of all things. Upon graduation, James Jordan joined the Air Force and was stationed in San Antonio, Texas. In 1956, he transferred to a base in Virginia and he married Dolores. Their first son, James Ronald Ronnie Jr., was born the following year. Jordan then left the Air Force and got a job at a textile mill in Wallace. The Jordans had two more children, Dolores and a son, Larry. In 1963, the Jordans left their children with Jordan's mother and moved to Brooklyn so that he could receive a mechanics training on the GI Bill. He studied airplane hydraulics, and she found work at a bank. While living in Brooklyn, the Jordans had another child, Michael. He was the youngest of all the kids that the Jordan family would have. But as crime began to increase in Brooklyn in the 1960s, the Jordans moved back to North Carolina to raise their children in a safer environment. Upon completing his 18 months training, Jordan and his family moved to Wilmington, North Carolina. It was there that the couple's fifth child, Rosalyn, was born. A huge sports fan, James Jordan encouraged his son to pursue sports at all costs. He was a big basketball fan, but he was also a big baseball fan, and he almost went pro himself. He hit the semi-pro level, which is something that would inspire Michael to try his hand at baseball after his father's murder and his first retirement from the NBA. And James Jordan was the biggest supporter of his son. He would attend every game he could, and he even got a taste of fame himself. With Michael's stardom hitting an apex, there were plenty of opportunities for James to get his, you know, little snippet of fame too. He even appeared in a Hanes commercial with Michael.
Michael. Are these your Hanes?
Mm-hmm.
Son, is there a reason why you wear them?
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Think Mom would like me in these? Maybe.
What a move by Hanes. Kind of a random, I mean, like, to get the endorsement deal, I was kind of blown away they were doing it this early.
Yeah.
1992,
yeah, God,
he's already,
really
like, supporting Hanes. It also, like, that commercial is so, no way it'd fly today, but I love it.
I mean, I don't know. It's just like the dad being like, oh, your wife or your girl likes you. Do you think my wife would
like me in some Hanes tidy whities?
Yeah.
Like silk banana hammocks?
Yeah, I don't know. I also just heard that before Michael even signed on with the Bulls or was drafted, they was getting endorsement deals. Like they were like ready to make him the star that he was.
Nike obviously lucked out, pretty much bet their whole bankroll on him and cashed in. That was a good bet there, Nike.
Yeah. But yeah, they were close. But I don't think that his dad was trying to steal the limelight, but be just more supportive of his son. And I think they were truly like best friends. That's what the vibe I get from it.
It's endearing.
Yeah.
I feel like I don't remember Michael Jordan's dad like being a part of the media culture and everything. Like when I was a kid, I didn't find out. I don't remember, you know, even hearing about the murder until I was an adult.
Yeah.
And I think maybe that some of that's like a testimony of like, yeah, he wasn't like, you know, too in front of the camera, too much of his son's hype man. I think he was, yeah, just a proud father.
Yeah.
He was in the background because he was actually always there for his son.
Yeah, I don't remember it either because, I mean, we were kids. It's funny you say that because when I was researching this, there's a New York Times article from 1993 that says, quote, Michael Jordan's father, James, loved to be around his son, and his son loved it in return. They had a ritual before every game that the father attended. There are these deep, winding stairs to the locker room in Chicago Stadium, and the father would always have a cup of a soft drink, and his son would take a few sips before entering the court where he would invariably dazzle the crowd. Meaning, like, cameras were on both of them. Like, he was always...
had his little, you know, simple moment with his father. Mm-hmm. That, like, seems so, like, you know, that's, like, before an AAU game. Like, how long have they been doing that together?
It's really cute.
Yeah.
And his father also constantly gave him incredible advice and really rooted for him. He was always there. And would talk to the reporters and just support his son.
Now tell me about him. Now Michael is one of these rare athletes that, as great as he is during a season, he really gets into another focus during the playoffs.
Yeah, well, you know, Michael sort of bought this forward as he grew up, you know. He's one of those individuals that hates to lose. And I think this is what the people is enjoying right now.
He was in a great frame of mind this morning. Wasn't he ready for this one?
He was in a great frame of mind. Matter of fact, I think that he's going to leave everything he has on the floor today.
All right, thanks, James. All right, Marv.
Thank you, Ahmad. Michael Jordan with 10 points in the first quarter. Second quarter is underway.
According to the Netflix documentary, The Last Dance, Michael was extremely competitive. He would be in the back of the plane, gambling and playing cards with Scottie Pippen for thousands of dollars. And guys like Will Perdue were playing in the front for, you know, dollars, essentially. They would be playing blackjack. And he was playing with John Paxton. And Michael goes up to the front of the plane and says to them, like, can I play? And John Paxton was like, why in the hell do you want to play with us? And Michael says, because I want to say I got your money in my pocket.
Yeah. That's the sign of a true competitor, I suppose.
Yeah. And he was probably just being funny.
Well, yeah. But like, I think he did. He wanted to beat everybody and be better than everybody at everything.
Yeah.
You know? And so if he hadn't played yet, taking your money, whether it be one-on-one or cards, you know, you had to check that box off.
And apparently he was a huge gambler, which we will go into in a little bit, but mostly very competitive.
Yeah, I've heard stories and rumors even before I saw The Last Dance that Michael Jordan is one hell of a gambler.
Yeah,
like always gambling on golf.
Yeah, and extremely competitive. Like, apparently, like, Horace Grant, who I think got the last shot, we'll talk about it in a second, always felt like he was, like, kind of, I don't know, like, in Michael's shadow. Like, everyone kind of felt like they were Michael's shadow because he was such...
Well, he was.
Like, well, that's...
who wasn't?
Okay, fair. Well, fair. I mean, he was such a huge star.
I mean, you inspired kids with glasses everywhere. for years to come. I mean, it was like, you know, it was cool. You could wear goggles, you know, and your PTYF basketball league, you're in third grade, you're like Horace Grant. You know, I could make it all the way to the pros with these goggles on.
That's hilarious to me because in the Netflix doc, he's not wearing glasses, but in, or his goggles, but in one of the like game footage when he gets the last shot or whatever, he's wearing those goggles. And I remember seeing those as a kid. Now that you're saying that, like, oh yeah.
Oh, it's the truth. He inspired all of us.
Were they glasses or were they to protect his eyes from getting like punched or something?
No, it was because, yeah, he was farsighted or nearsighted.
Did they not have contacts back then?
You know, it was a choice. And some, you know, you're in fifth grade, hard to get contacts in. This is pre-LASIK days, you know. Horace Grant inspired a lot of blurry vision kids out there.
That's adorable.
Yeah.
Well, the other guy today when we were watching was wearing like a face mask to protect his nose, which I resonated with because I had to quit sports because I broke my nose too many times. So
maybe you should try a face mask.
Yeah, maybe.
Just casually around the ranch.
Yeah. Well, it's not like anyone's going to see me besides the mountain lion who essentially, whatever.
There's okay. There's
evidence there was a mountain lion right in front of the house, but I digress. So, yeah. Other players felt like he was in Michael's shadow and, you know, there was, you know, speculation or whatever that, you know, Michael had said to people, but he claims it's not true. And I'm a big Michael fan, so I'm going to err on his side that he would say, like, not to pass the ball to a certain player during, like, crunch time. And if they did, then he would quit or something along those lines.
I think he probably 100% said that. But when you have the winning rate that he does, mm-hmm. when you are as clutch as he proved to be.
If you can one-arm dunk.
If you can basically fly.
Yeah. Okay, fair. All right, well, this was starting to come to a head, though, especially when in a 1993 game, in Game 2 of the Finals against the Knicks, who were already leading the series, Michael Jordan had gone to a casino. So this is where the gambling's coming back in. Had gone to a casino with his dad the night prior. The papers printed he was in Atlantic City until 2:30 a.m. or so. He claims he and his dad rented a limo to take them to the casino to escape New York City, and they were back by 12:30 at the latest. But he was fighting an uphill battle of criticism at this point. Like, he was really just kind of getting hammered by the press. The media was really hitting him hard. And we're going to see that today's sin is going to be about the media and the public envy of him, media envy, like that he was getting hammered to the point that he couldn't really bear it. But because Michael Jordan couldn't go anywhere without being hounded, and it took a major toll on him. At certain points in the documentary, he explains how, and you've seen it, how he basically doesn't leave hotel rooms when he's traveling, and likely gambling at a casino was his escape.
Yeah, I mean, even now, and definitely through the better part of his career, he was arguably more recognizable than Jesus.
Yeah.
I mean, the most famous man on the planet.
It's really crazy to think about it. Like, it's fandom, stardom, more than, I don't know. I'm thinking
the
Madonna
only other
for some
I
reason.
Well, Gandhi, you know, Michael Jackson is the only, or the Beatles.
I think the Beatles is that's a great example. Or
maybe,
Elvis Presley.
Yeah, Presley and maybe Taylor Swift now.
Yeah.
Can say they've, you know, reached this level of just crazy.
I think for him, though, maybe because, like, people get so amped about sports. Of course they get amped about music, but it's such, like, a passionate, like, you're the leader, you're the hero type thing that it almost seemed bigger.
I mean, the one thing that I'll say Michael Jordan has different than Michael Jackson, Elvis, Taylor Swift is that, like, yes, he is, you know, not only a larger than life famous character, but he's performing like a god. You know, there's kind of some song and dance and some smoke and mirrors with being a singer,
mm-hmm.
or a performer or an actor, but like to be a professional basketball player and to win at that level, to always make the clutch last second shot, to just to have that trust level and to win like he did six titles is just like, you know,
he was superhuman,
godly. You know, he was looked at like a god. And I think that the media envy around it was nothing short of equally kind of evil for how much he was godlike, because it's like hard to believe he could win it again.
Yeah. And it's like people get jealous. Yeah. And he was also so charismatic, and like, yeah, he wasn't wearing goggles, which, horse, great choice. Great choice. I love it. But I mean, Michael Jordan was handsome, and he was very cocky too, but there was a big,
but he backed it up.
Yeah, there was a big charm about him. But in later interviews, which we're going to share some of those, he's also very like humble and like kind of breaks my heart now, but whatever.
Well, I mean, I can't imagine what he had to endure, because if you weren't from Chicago, you hated Michael Jordan. And there's all of these epic Hall of Fame players from the 90s. You're like, how did they not win a title? Like Barkley, Reggie Miller. It's because Michael Jordan won all the titles back then. And I was a victim of this as a Pacers fan growing up.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't even ever make it to the finals because we always just got knocked off by the Bulls in the Eastern Conference Finals. And we had stacked teams.
Well, and part of them hating on him was, we'll get into it more about his gambling, is that especially at this game when he went to like game two of the series, he went to a casino with his dad, but he was just trying to escape, honestly. And I could let the dude live. They were speculating and starting to investigate into his gambling, because they were like, is he betting on basketball? Is he betting on
the thing is though, it's like, if he was betting, he was betting on himself.
But you're not allowed to do that.
I know you're not, but it's not like he's throwing the game. I mean, and they give him all this shit like, oh, you're out partying in Atlantic City. But did he not just go and crush the Nets the following day? You know? Like,
well, no, he didn't. That's the thing. Oh, that's the thing.
I'm not familiar with this game. So, game two. Oh.
But we're going to come back to game two in a second. But his gambling issue was, well, an issue. He would bet on anything, compete for anything. But no one was without flaws, and his public life needed an escape. And when I say an issue, it's like, you know, let's be honest. He could afford it. He could afford to pay his gambling debts. I mean, he was the first billionaire basketball player in history. So let the man live. But others had a different opinion. When the Bulls won the championship in 1991 and were invited to the White House, Michael Jordan didn't show up. He was out gambling with Slim Buller, a golf hustler.
Whoa. I never knew about this.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't show up at the White House. That's a little blemish on Pretty Boy MJ's record. I don't know. I just, huh.
I'm still a big fan. Everyone makes mistakes.
Still a big fan. But yeah. I just didn't know there was this kind of like dicey bad boy era of Michael Jordan.
Well, wait for it. There's more. So this incident and Slim Buller's subsequent arrest in December of 1991 for federal drug and money laundering charges, after he was found with over $100,000 in cash at the airport and an uncashed $57,000 check from Michael Jordan himself to allegedly cover up golf and gambling debts, really put his whole gambling thing on the map.
Whoa.
Yep.
That's like really tiptoeing the criminal line.
Yeah. Jordan claims the $57,000 was to avoid embarrassment for a gambling debt. And I kind of sympathize with him when I see him in the documentary saying that, because, I mean, he kind of acknowledges maybe he had a gambling issue, but he originally stated, though, to the public or to authorities that it was for like a loan or a businessy thing.
Interesting.
Yeah, but then he got called into court and had to testify at Slim's trial.
Ooh.
He testified for 9 minutes, but he was never personally implicated in any crime, never suspected by federal prosecutors to have done anything more than hang out with the wrong crowd, essentially.
I see.
Yeah, but Slim Bowler and Michael Jordan's lives are kind of...
Slim Bowler, what a, like, bookie kind of name.
Yeah, it is. And he seemed to, like, kind of, what's the right word, hustle, like a lot of celebrities. There's an article from theathletic.com where he's, like, showing photos of the various celebrities that were, you know, at golf games with him, like Dan Marino and, I don't know.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So he's a golf hustler.
Yeah, which I don't really understand. Like, so it's just, like, two guys, or, well, usually a pair of, or a group of four, quadruple of four, meeting up. So is he, are they gambling on just the game they're playing, but it's not, like, connected to a casino?
Yeah.
Huh.
So, you know, just gentleman's honor, handshake, bets.
Just hustling. How did Michael Jordan lose 57,000?
Well, I mean...
Well, I guess he was betting thousands, like when we were talking about their plane ride to...
Yeah. Chasing a bet on the greens.
Yeah. So he was maybe running with the wrong people, but like we said, he was not charged with any penalty. His dad, however, had been arrested during Michael's reign with the Bulls and was charged with fraud for a kickback scheme. You see, he accepted a $7,000 check from a private contractor while he was employed at his plant in Wilmington. This would eventually be how they were able to identify his body because of the fingerprints taken at the arrest. His dad was a complicated man, a sweet man, charismatic as well, positive, but not without his flaws as well.
Yeah, but man, that seems like such like a small time, like a $7,000 scheme, and he got in trouble because he was like working another job. Like, I don't understand like why he got in trouble.
I don't quite understand what a kickback scheme means. Was it that like there was a private contractor, so he's working in a plant, and he worked as like a job for someone else. I don't quite know. He was also, though, listen.
It just doesn't seem that, like, scumbag-y. Like, it doesn't seem like that shady of a deal, I guess.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I thought...
Like, he might have been taken. Like, he might not have understood.
Maybe. You know? I mean, he didn't
con
go to,
man.
Like, prison for it or anything.
He was the part, you know, the victim of a con man scheme.
Yeah, kind of sounds like it. I should have looked more into it. I didn't quite understand what it was, but yeah. And because it seemed fairly small to me, but people bring this stuff up because the whole thing with his murder is there's a lot of conspiracy theories, but everyone wants to dig stuff up to figure out, you know, why this happened. And none of Michael's, spoiler alert, but we'll discuss the conspiracy theories. But in my opinion, Michael's gambling, this act from his dad, had nothing to do with why he was murdered. But the other thing that because I thought that the kickback scheme thing seemed so small and I didn't quite understand it, I chose to not include this, but I guess I'll say it now. He was apparently also on, federal, like, FBI radar for a burglary he did when he was, like, in his teens or, like, early 20s or something. But still.
Yeah, it seems kind of irrelevant.
Yeah.
But it
so is...
So was he murdered over this kickback scheme?
No, but this is... We're building into it now. Like,
okay.
It's the lack of information and the lore and the fame of Michael Jordan that led to people having conspiracy theories. So, because we're not yet there in the story. So Michael shows up to game two, apparently looking exhausted from going out the night before to the casino with his dad. And the game ended with a Knicks win of 96, Bulls 91. all which seemed to be blamed on Jordan for going to the casino the night before. Now, there's five people on the court, right, at any given time, and Jordan was at his breaking point. Sure, he might not have performed his best, but there's an entire team to bring each other up. Don't you agree, Greg?
This is true. It's a team sport. Now, I mean, he was definitely carrying the team, but there were some other sidekick players, you know, Horse.
Yeah.
And Scottie Pippen as well.
Dennis Rodman. I almost said Donis Rodman. Dennis Rodman.
Rodman wasn't on the team, I don't think, this year. We got John Paxton. This is early year, so they hadn't got Rodman yet.
Oh, Rodman was when Michael came back from retirement.
Yes.
I say Michael like he's my friend. I might as well just call him Mikey.
Oh, Mike.
So, Michael's reputation was kind of damaged at this point, though. And he did look exhausted, at least in the footage they showed in the Netflix documentary. And this is when the NBA had begun investigating his gambling. And at this point, he couldn't keep up with the pressure and the constant pain of the pressure and just the anxiety of it. And so Michael refused to speak to the media at that point. And that's when the media became a sin. That's when they really started harping on their golden boy.
It's a power move by Mike, though, you know?
Yeah, well, and guess who stepped in? His dad. His biggest supporter became his PR and his voice. And Michael claims that he asked him not to, you know, speak on his behalf, but his dad absolutely did. And his dad said, it was my idea to go to the casino that night and, you know, don't hurt my boy. It's really sweet.
He's a good man. Loves his son.
But Michael fights back from all this criticism. His competitive nature and ability to compartmentalize and focus on his game kicked in, and he started nailing game after game. The entire Bulls team did. And by game three of that year, they clipped the Knicks off by 20 points, 103-83. Bulls were back.
Dun, dun, dun.
They're actually insane shots to watch.
Oh, man, yeah.
We're not trying to make this a sports podcast, but because I'm covering this, I've watched enough clips that I'm like, the athleticism.
Whether you like basketball or not, watching the highlights in the Last Dance is a treat.
Yeah. It truly is. So then by game four, they won 105-95. And then the Bulls close out the 1993 championship with Horace Grant passing to Paxton for the final shot.
Against Sir Charles and the Phoenix Suns in the NBA Finals.
Okay.
Just wanted to clarify.
I get confused. Finals and championship, what's the difference?
Well, there's the Eastern Conference Finals and the Western Conference Finals. To then, you know, send each team to the NBA Finals.
Okay, well, it's
different
appears,
conferences.
It appears I've gotten a little cocky about my sports knowledge because the next statement I'm about to make, I'm a little nervous might not be true.
Go for it.
They won the finals in 1993, and he was with his dad in the locker room and knew it was probably his last game. Did I get that right, the finals?
That's right.
Okay.
How did he know it was his last game? Michael Jordan knew it was last.
I think, at least the way they allude to it in the Last Dance documentary, the pressure of, like, the media pressure, because it was all coming to a head.
I see.
Getting to him.
Mm-hmm.
But then, as you'll soon see, for another reason, he also needed to step out for a bit. On July 23rd, 1993... James Jordan was supposed to arrive at the Chicago airport and be picked up by Michael's assistant and close friend, George Kohler. But James wasn't to be seen. According to a 1993 New York Times article, Michael Jordan said he had a thing about his father or mother coming to one of his games. "I feel I have to make sure that they are there safely," he said. "I have to check before the game just so I know. I've been doing that ever since high school. It's a sense of safety, I guess. I just want to make sure they got there." Which is heartbreaking, knowing what happens next. Michael had purchased his dad his prized possession, a cherry red Lexus. And his father, James, was driving from between two southern towns, Wilmington and Charlotte. On July 22, 1993, his dad went to the funeral of a former coworker in Wilmington and then went back to the widow's house and had dinner and a few drinks. Investigators believe on his way back to his home in Charlotte around midnight, he pulled off on a service road about an hour into the drive to take a nap. In Robeson County, which is about halfway between Miami and Manhattan on I-95 and is considered the drug-running corridor known as Cocaine Alley. At this point, he was approached by two teens who had been outcasts of sorts that became close because of their shared loneliness, but that bond went bad eventually. Larry Demery and Daniel Green were just 17 and 18 when this crime occurred, and Greg is going to read the transcript from Green's recent interview on the podcast, What It Was Like. And I encourage you to listen to the whole interview. They did a wonderful job, but here's a short excerpt.
In the words of Larry Demery, I remember the first time I met Daniel. I met him in the third grade playing frisbee. He and I became best friends. We grew up fishing and hunting. There were lots of swimming holes too. But Daniel got into a scuffle when he was 15 and went to prison. And when he came out, something happened. He'd changed. But not just on his end, but for me too. Going from 15 to 17, you can go through a lot of changes during those years. The day he got out, we went back to my parents' house. We were just sitting out in the yard and he kept saying, I gotta go do something, man. I gotta figure out what to do. And I'm like, so what do you want to do? And I think that was the moment we threw it all away. What he was talking about was robbery. We borrowed a pistol from his mom and used it to commit the first one. We were off to the races after that. On the night we crossed paths with Michael Jordan's dad, we had already robbed a convenience store and a couple outside a motel. There are motels right by Highway 95, the interstate that runs through North Carolina, so we were hanging around outside, creeping around, waiting for people to pop out. But not much was happening, and we noticed a car sitting not far from the motel, right beside the highway. Daniel actually mentioned it first. He said, man, you know what? That's a Lexus. At the time, I didn't know what a Lexus was because they'd only been out for like a year or two. But we decided to go check it out. There in the front seat, we found a guy asleep, laying there with gold rings on his fingers and a gold watch. We actually thought the guy was a dope dealer to be in a ride like that, sitting beside the road asleep. So we just walked by a couple of times and checked it out. Then we decided to rob the guy. The plan was to drive him down the road and just put him out. Then drive off with his stuff. But it didn't work out that way. There was only one pistol. Daniel had it. He tried to hand it to me, but I was like, no man, no. I'm not trying to make myself sound like an innocent person or anything. I was right there and down with the program. But nobody was supposed to have gotten hurt. The man was lying there asleep, so I remember he took it, and then there was a shot. That was it, just one shot while the man lay there asleep. When he was hit, he just moved around a little bit, made a noise like a moaning noise, then sat up real quick. There was a moment he laid back again, and that was it. Just a few seconds, and he stopped moving. I remember Daniel saying, hey, help move him. I can't move him myself. Because we had to reach out and pull him over from the driver's side into the passenger side so we could get behind the wheel. Then Daniel got in and took off. I went and got in my car and we took off down the road. Once we were away from the crime scene, we pulled off next to a cornfield to check out the car. Daniel started going through the man's pockets and taking his shoes off. I went into the trunk where I found a couple of golf bags but didn't really notice anything unusual. But then Daniel calls out, man, I believe we got Michael Jordan's dad here. I was like, what are you talking about? He held up the driver's license and went, "Look!" And I read the name, James R. Jordan. Of course, everybody from North Carolina knew who Mike was, but James R. didn't really mean anything to me at the time. But as we continued going through the car, we took the man's watch off, and the engraving on the back of it read, "To Dad, from Michael and Juanita." I don't know why, but I knew that Michael Jordan's wife's name was Juanita. And that's when everything fell into place. Suddenly, I noticed one set of golf clubs in the trunk all had the Chicago Bulls sign on them, red and black. I was tripping out, especially because there was a dead man, a dead body right there in the car, and I'd never been that close to a dead person. Then there was the fact that we were responsible for taking his life.
Many questions were involved in his death. For example, Jordan's body was found in a swamp in McCall, South Carolina, 11 days after the murder. And he was cremated as a John Doe on August 7th by a South Carolina coroner, and his body had not been identified at that point. His car had been stripped and left in woods near Fayetteville, North Carolina, 60 miles from where his body was found. And the Jordan family took 3 weeks before reporting their beloved patriarch missing. His 57th birthday came and went on July 31st, 9 days after he had last been seen alive. And on the 22nd day, his body was identified with dental records. Weeks prior, Michael had his dad by his side, and they were celebrating another record-breaking win, the Bulls' third consecutive NBA championship. Arm in arm, father and son, best friends. This changed the course of Michael's life. Understandably, that's the most heartbreaking thing that could possibly happen to a person. And Michael Jordan retired from basketball shortly after his dad was found dead, and then quickly, almost as a coping mechanism, ran towards the sport that his dad had first influenced him in, baseball. After throwing out the first pitch at the Sox game, and then speculation flew around that he was going to quit basketball forever.
Thanks, Jerry. I think everyone knows exactly what the circumstances are right now in terms of my decision not to play the game of basketball in the NBA. Doesn't mean I'm not going to play basketball somewhere else, but I've talked to all my confidants, my family, my friends. As Jerry has just informed you to the organization, I even talked to David Stern as of yesterday and even today, and I'm very solid with my decision of not to play the game of basketball in the NBA. Reasoning being, I've heard a lot of different speculations about my reasons for not playing, but I've always stressed to people that have known me and the media that has followed me that when I lose the sense of motivation and the sense of to prove something as a basketball player, it's time for me to move away from the game of basketball. And I guess the biggest gratification, I'm a very optimistic person, I guess the biggest positive thing that I can take out of my father not being here with me today is that he saw my last basketball game, and that means a lot. It was something that he and I have talked, and my family has talked for a long time.
The saddest thing is those gambling addictions came back around. In all of the conspiracy theories, Michael was almost blamed for his dad's death. He said, quote, "When James Jordan was murdered, I lost my dad. I also lost my best friend. I am trying to deal with the overwhelming feelings of loss and grief in a way that would make my dad proud. I simply cannot comprehend how others could intentionally pour salt in my open wound by insinuating that faults and mistakes in my life are in some way connected to my father's death."
It's crazy, Rachel, because this was such a big moment in my childhood. Like, I remember when Michael Jordan retired early, and it felt out of nowhere. I didn't know about his dad's death, and I think that I kind of got this memory as you were telling the story of, like, why didn't I know about that as a child? Why didn't I remember that his father was murdered? I think my mom might have told me that he had a heart attack. just as to kind of like
smooth it over. Well, that's interesting that you say that, though. It's basically the conspiracy theories kind of come around the fact that the Jordan family, Michael Jordan himself, they went very silent afterwards. And so everyone was left with like the unknowing. And so then just people's brains just started going with like, okay, he had been gambling before. And like they were just trying to make up, you know, scenarios in which this could have happened. And the tragic thing is, it was just
a senseless murder.
Yeah.
That makes it, I feel like, even harder probably for Michael to rationalize. Like, it's just so senseless, purposeless, no motivation, robbery.
Yeah.
And like, they didn't even know that he was the father of the world's most popular athlete.
Yeah. And they didn't find out until after. And the crazy thing, too, is part of the way they got caught is when they stole the championship rings, one of the guys made is on a VHS tape, like a rap video, and he's wearing the championship rings. Oh,
my God.
Yeah. And it's just all so icky and senseless. And I think that that's the part of this story that is so hard for people to comprehend, but also the most heartbreaking and tragic if you truly understand what happened. I mean, that's what I believe happened. It was just it was two wayward teens that, you know, were on a bad path, doing bad shit, and his dad got caught in the crossfire. But people were speculating that it was the mafia was involved. It was Michael's gambling debt.
Well, when you've got someone of such a large profile like Michael Jordan, so famous, so successful, it just seems, it's like hard to believe that there's not some sort of correlation. And also, you know, he at that point, after three championships in a row, yeah, like I said before, if you weren't from the city of Chicago, you kind of hated Michael Jordan because mm-hmm. he was keeping your team from winning. And I mean, I remember the feeling as a little kid, like when Michael Jordan retired, you know, my first thought was not, you know, oh, to a great, it was, oh, maybe the Pacers can win this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, the media had a target on his back. And obviously this is something that's just like hard to chalk it up to a senseless crime.
Yeah, people hate people that, you know, people want to take someone down after a certain point. And Michael Jordan understood that. There's many clips of him saying that, like, he understood that. And I think that's why he went so private and probably why he retired from basketball and then went to baseball, because that was just his dad's first love. And I think that was his, like, healing coping mechanism. And he was just fleeing from everyone.
Certainly. I think it's a beautiful ode to his father.
I think so, too.
To go play baseball and to make it like it's not about anything else but, like, the love of the game. And his love of the game of basketball had been tarnished because of this. And he trying to, you know, cope with the loss of his father. Like, it really is a romantic thing. And how cool that, like, arguably the world's greatest athlete, certainly the most competitive, certainly the best basketball player the world has ever seen, and for him to take that stance and, like, you know, this is more important than basketball, I think is really cool. And
are you going to be the crier on this episode?
Yeah, no.
It seems like it, because I'm ready to cry, but it is a weird, like, it not weird, but it feels like it was his way of healing or something, or like a coping mechanism. Like I said, like I'm not going to do basketball without my dad right now, because he was his biggest, you know, supporter. So I'm going to do what my dad loved. I mean, even though his dad loved basketball, but his dad, you know, played baseball. I'm going to live kind of through my dad, because his dad almost went pro in baseball.
Yeah. And it's really, I think, breathtaking. It makes you you know, step back and realize that, like, we're all human in a sense. It was kind of this equalizer. Like, even though Michael Jordan is this big, you know, he has an Achilles heel, mm-hmm. like we all do, you know, our family, our loved ones, and that not everybody's just protected, mm-hmm. you know, despite how high profile you might be. Like, the universe is chaotic and senseless in so many ways, and it could be a car crash, it could be a freak accident, but you could lose a loved one in the blink of an eye, and it happens even to Michael Jordan.
Yeah, I agree. The evil part of this, or the seven deadly sin or whatever, is that I think it felt like for him, people, he said he knew his loved ones, you know, and his friends didn't want this, but basically, like, the media and everyone else, like, they were waiting to see him fall. And that's what's hard. It's like, someone can be super successful and also not face this incredible tragedy. I mean, I know that that's life. It does happen, but it feels hurtful, I think, that it felt like, you know, I think they said in the Netflix documentary, it wasn't the media or publicities or journalists' finest hour or something, because they were going after him for his own father's death.
And, you know, like you said, everyone was waiting for him to fall. People wanted to see him suffer by any means because their team had lost to him for so long. It's not right.
I hate that mentality. I really do. But you know what? That's why he's on top. And, you know, it's terrible and tragic that he lost his father. But I think at the end of, like, researching all this, he breaks my heart. Like, he's got this kind of saddest, kindest eyes at a certain point. Yeah, he's cocky as shit. And
that's competitive. Why there's the Michael Jordan crying meme. You've had to have seen that.
Oh, yes, I've seen it. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, he's cocky as shit. He's competitive. And sure, he likes to gamble, but he was needing an escape. I mean, we've been betting on March Madness.
So, yeah, I mean,
who among us doesn't? But you get my point. Like, yeah, he's got human flaws, but he seems so genuinely good,
well,
in my opinion.
Well, I think that how he reacted to the murder of his father shows that most eloquently, that he's human and genuine, and he wasn't going to let the media take him for a ride. He wasn't going to go play basketball because that's what people wanted to see, or, you know, have to listen to what they'd say about that. He did what was in his heart, and then, as everyone knows, for him to come back.
Mm-hmm.
And mid-season, can't wear 23, he's got to wear number 45. It was against the Pacers, his first game back. And then to lead the Bulls to three more championships in a row is, like, you know, greatness personified.
I think that's the way we should end it. I think that's perfect. And rest in peace, James Jordan. And yeah, sometimes things are just tragic and haphazard, and they don't have to have a conspiracy theory. It's not Bigfoot, like I want everything to be. That's a joke. But no, it's a fascinating story, and yeah, again, rest in peace.
I'm grateful I got to witness the Michael Jordan era with my own two eyes on a tube TV in the 1990s.